Hello, everyone.
Hey, Curtis.
There.
You'll see my little video pop up here in a second. All right.
Gotcha.
Sorry for the delay getting to you all, but, you know, apparently I was had an overlap in my booking and didn't finish until exactly at 11 o'clock. So, you know, I'm happy to be with everybody today. And I thought maybe a good place to start is to kind of recap for a few moments of what you valued from the first session we had. What you got out of it, what you're struggling with, and what some questions. So I'm going to shift to your agenda first today.
I would say that it brought to our attention things we've discussed often in our team meetings.
Okay.
And, you know, we're a hit and miss on a lot of the topics that you brought up. I think we're good at some, we're weak at some. We let the day control us and we can't control what we'd like to do for some of the clients on a daily basis. And I see some big benefits there. If we can get this lined up to where we want it and need to be, we'll be in good shape.
Okay.
With your help, Curtis.
Sure. Well, you got my help. You got my 100% support on that.
Good.
And look, you're going to be going through a lot of material, as I said before. Don't be alarmed. Some of this stuff we'll review over and over again until you get it. So when you have questions like you had last week, feel free, you know, to hit me back up. So that's a good. How about you, Pedden Ford?
I think one of our biggest struggles was the minimums, and mainly because I'm an FAA and I can't really sometimes afford not to take these smaller accounts because I actually do get credit for them. And
right.
Sometimes I actually do need them to, you know, stay in the program.
Right. You got to stay in the program. You got to hit your numbers so you can hit your thresholds, correct?
Yep. Yep. And I understand the long term, it just creates more problems. But short term, I also need to keep my job and not get kicked out.
Okay. I think we can kind of figure out how to do both, okay? All right. Lisa, tell me about what your thoughts might be in terms of the first session and what we went through and any questions or concerns you may have.
Did you call me? My volume was cutting up.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just throwing the questions back at you to give me some feedback.
Right. I think, you know, like Johnny said, one of my biggest things that I hope we gain from this is how we are more proactive instead of reactive to our day. I'm a pretty regimented kind of list maker, and I would love to be able to navigate our schedule during the day a little better. I'm pretty excited about figuring out how we're going to refine our process.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said before, the toughest thing you're going to go through right now is the segmentation organization component. By way of review, let's review some of the concepts, and then you all can throw out some questions if you have them. But what we're trying to do is get down to your core, okay? We're trying to determine your best clients, and so you're going through those 8 screens to determine that, okay? The 80-20 rule prevails. Now, what do we mean by that? We mean, you know, 80% of your revenue is probably going to come from 20% of your clients. I don't know, Prato came up with that, but it seems to always be the case, no matter who we talk to. Okay, and I'm sure that's the case with you. We talked about the minimum max. The absolute minimum is the real average of your practice. Those are the clients you're going to keep. Okay? So if you have a real large 401k, don't include that in the number. Okay? Now, your target minimum is the average of the top 20% of the clients that you're going to keep. So these are the folks that you want to have referrals come through once we educate you on the referral process. Okay? And this is what you're going to tell your COIs when they get identified, that this is the type of client we enjoy working with. This is the target, you know, revenue or not revenue, but target asset level that we would like to work with. Okay. And we make exceptions from time to time. You know, if there's an individual that's going to lead to a larger relationship or somebody you feel we really need to get to know, then by all means, make the introduction. Okay. So exceptions can be made between your absolute minimum and your target. Now, I'm going to ask this. I'm going to throw it back to you. Have you identified what your target relationship is? And I think last time it was somewhere around 500,000 maybe. But please kind of articulate that to me. What's your target minimum relationship that you want to go after in the future?
Between now, that's the 500. Yeah, currently we're at 350, 100. That's with the 100 being in the training program for Peyton. But our target would be a $500,000 minimum.
Okay. 500,000 minimum. Okay. That's fine. That's what we're going to start with. Now, before, I think you're telling me that it was like 350. So you're going to try to move that to 500,000. Now, in the process of us working together, I don't want you to get a little nervous. I'm going to make you squeam a little bit, but I want you to get that target to probably 750. And probably by the end of 12 months, you're going to be targeting million-dollar relationships. Now, what blows my mind when you start looking at the demographics out there, and especially you moving to Greenville, that's a huge retirement area. People are coming in with those kinds of assets. Okay? So we're going to accept the 500. We're going to be thinking about moving towards 750 and then on to a million-dollar relationship. Peden, John is probably going to assign some relationships to you that don't fit his practice. Later on, you're going to have to lever yourself up. Now, what minimum have they set for you at Morgan Stanley?
Program?
Yeah.
I think it's anything over, it's either 25 or 50.
25 or 50,000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's if they're producing revenue.
Okay. If they're producing revenue. So they're saying to you, you can bring in $25,000 relationships. Now, if you have a relationship that's got 250 to 500,000 and Johnny works with you on that relationship, you'll take that, right?
I'll take it by myself if I can.
Okay. So what I want you to do is work with your Morgan Stanley minimums, but clearly now I want you to step it up. I want you to start stepping it up to $250,000. And I'm going to tell you a story. At Merrill Lynch, we had something called the Ready Asset Account. It had a $5,000 minimum. So it was a money market fund. We were opening up those counts left and right, 14, 15 of them a month. Then we came out with the cash management account. The minimum account size was 20,000. So guess what? People started bringing in 20,000. Then what happened is we discovered that the average account size within 36 months was somewhere around $250,000. People just automatically added more assets to those relationships. So what did we discover? We discovered that people had those kinds of assets, and we weren't doing the deep dive. So now you're going to do the deep dive with your planning capability to extract out the remainder of those assets that might be floating around because you've elevated your service model. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's kind of what we've been aiming for since I joined, but okay. Yeah, I get it. So what if, like, let's say I'm right on the edge of, you know, tearing up and $100,000 client comes along that will get me above, you're saying I shouldn't take it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Take the relationship, but begin to define the type of relationship you're going after. Okay. So when we get into client acquisition and we start talking about COIs and mastermind groups and ways of developing your clientele, I want you to be focused on a target minimum. Okay. So right now, I mean, you're like I was when I first started. If they were living, if they were breathing and they had a pulse, I opened up the account. And then I discovered that I could get a lot more referrals from those clients and develop a better service model to the ones that had higher asset thresholds. And that's going to happen to you too. Okay? All right. So we know what the minimum, absolute minimum is, which is the average of your practice and the ones that you're going to keep. And we know now what you're going to target. In terms of client relationships. We know what a butler is, right? We give them the 4-1 service. 4 contacts, 1 appointment. We know what our 12-4-2 service is. 12 contacts, 4 appointments. 2 of them are in-person reviews, and the other 2 are telephonic. A 1-hour response to problems, 24-hour resolution. Okay. Do you all have the service model down pretty good at this point?
I think we do.
You think you do? Okay. Now, Johnny, I'm going to put you on the spot. Now you're going to articulate the service model to me like Pedden did last time. So just go ahead and just, I'm a client. And tell me the nature of your practice and how it's evolved.
So you want your version or my version of that?
Give me your version. We'll go with your version.
Well, we have in our little bag of tricks a 90 day call list. Okay. And we print that weekly. There's about 5 or 6 on the 30 day and maybe 8 or 10 on the 90 day. They rotate out. Lisa provides that to me. At the bottom of that, there's a birthday list that we call and say happy birthday to those clients.
Okay.
And that's our standard model for everybody in the book. The 90 day is the smaller accounts. The 30 day is the larger ones.
Okay.
And I actually talk to them more often than that just because of our relationship on a day to day basis. They call me, I call them, but, you know, what we don't have is we do have to review with the client. It's not ingrained like your 12-4-2, which I
like
because you need to plan in front of them and say, this is what we talked about a year ago. Has anything changed? Do we need to update anything? And
right.
Anything to be expected for the coming year, that time. So we do that now, but I think it's more, we have too many of the 90 days. I think you'll agree with me there.
Okay.
That we don't treat the 30 day as we should be treating and ask for referrals from those. And often they give us referrals without us asking.
Okay. So here's the thing I've discovered. The client oftentimes that has 250 or less, they want to hear from you all the time. The folks that have 2 million, 3 million, they're a little bit busier. They need appointments. So that's where your business is going, the dynamic is going to shift. So you'll have to take control and take charge of that before you get overwhelmed and aren't able to give them the service model. So you've got to be able to articulate that. And what we find is once you do that, people will start bringing you more assets by default. Okay? So I really want you to just get in the habit now of articulating your service model. You know, look, we want to give you the best service that we possibly can give, Mr. Jones, and so we're elevating our capability to provide you with a concierge service. Now, let me explain what that means. That means that the minimum expectation you can expect from our team are 12 contacts per year at a regularly scheduled time. 4 appointments, with 2 of the appointments being reviews and 2 being telephonic reviews, a 1-hour response to problems with a 24-hour resolution, and making sure that we do a deep dive on a financial plan and think about intergenerational planning. Okay? Now, you're going to say, well, how do you feel about that and being on a regular call schedule? Because remember, things are happening in this dynamic. Okay? What can happen? There are births of children, grandchildren, marriages, people getting sick, people getting bonuses, people inheriting money, people thinking about education of their children in this new pandemic. The volatility of the markets necessitate telephone calls. So you've got this whole list of things that are going on, okay? So if you eliminate client contact, something's going to fall through the cracks. So it's important to now articulate your service model. Okay? All right. And remember, busy people schedule everything. They schedule time with their lawyers, with their CPAs. So having a schedule with one of the most important people in their lives, which are you, is very, very important. Okay. Now, are we at a point now where you have a comfort level in reassigning clients at this point and what you say? Well, let me back up before we go to that. Are you comfortable being able to articulate your new service model to your clients? Throw that out at you, Johnny.
You know, I would think I can certainly, as they say, talk the horns off of a billy goat. I can get that message across to my top clients easily. They would appreciate what you just said about the scheduling of, and they are busy. Sometimes that's why I miss a call to them. Okay. They're busy. I'll call you back. The next day comes and then a week goes by.
Right.
And that happens to a lot of those guys. Now, some of them we aren't, no, unfortunately we have widows in our books and they aren't old widows, but they're elderly.
Sure.
And they're playing bridge and cards and flowers and whatever they do, you know, but
yeah,
to get them
sure.
on a schedule, they would do that. They would honor that time that I'm to call and have a conversation with them. So.
Okay.
I can articulate that to them very easily, and I think they would appreciate it. The others, the smaller, that 90-day call list, there's a mixed batch of those, and a large percentage of those I think would invite that because they're business people too. I probably don't have all their assets. I'm pretty confident that I don't.
Okay.
And part of this program is going to enhance that, but I can do that to that group. And then there's a group out there that just seemed to flow with the winds. And maybe that's the call center we're talking about. I don't know. But they do have assets and or there's potential for assets. So
okay.
I would have to sit with those guys. And I think I'm the in-person type. Here. It won't be a script over the phone to the ones that I want to continue to do business with.
Okay. Okay.
There's a few I might not even call, you know?
Right. I understand. They may be going to the butler category. Remember, three butlers equal one client.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, so your assignment for week one is setting your absolute target minimums, setting your absolute maximum number of clients that you're going to work with. Remember, we want you to have this quality of life. Wouldn't it be nice to have 75 to 85 relationships with average assets of $2 million that you call on a regular scheduled basis and manage that part of your practice very, very efficiently? And then you can take a little more time off and take a breather without managed chaos coming in. That's where we're trying to get to. All right. Now, right now, you're probably going to reassign, if that's permissible, some of the smaller relationships to Pedden so he can try to do a deep dive with them. Are you doing that?
That's kind of an ongoing process, I would say.
Ongoing? Yeah. Okay. Now, Lisa. Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we've been doing that since I first started. I've been kind of keeping in touch more with the smaller clients than Johnny has.
Okay. Very good. Now, is Lisa, are you handling any client relationships yourself? Or are you primarily the administrative, applying that capability to the practice?
Well, since the CSA that was assigned to the Pedden group departed in March and we moved home to work because of COVID, I've been doing the client service role and administrative pieces that, and I do speak with the clients, and because of the fact that our client base was built over the last 30 years, a lot of them are people that I know, people that I used to work with, people in our community, our church. So I'm very comfortable with speaking with a lot of the clients as far as, you know, explaining any of the, like the meeting that Johnny would have or Peyton would have to go over their results or their, investments. That I don't do that.
Okay. Now, do you have a production number?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I think I understand where your role comes in. Okay. Let's talk about niche markets for a moment. There's two types. There's your natural one. That's what you kind of came into the business with. And then there's maybe that market that you're targeting that you're trying to reach. Johnny, can you kind of give me a sense of where the focus of your practice is in terms of niche marketing?
Yeah, I think it initially started in the agriculture field where my previous career was, ag equipment sales and all the vendors that supply that. And then of course the farmers themselves. So that's what the book started with.
Okay.
And it has filtrated out. And I looked at that top list you mentioned and to find a niche market that might have developed within all of that, I can't say I identify one. And today it's still that agriculture side. I've talked to five of those people today. You know, it's just, they're a good group of core people that sit around by the fireside, if you will, and talk to you. And,
okay.
But the other part of that niche market, I could go in any direction personally. I like cars, antique cars. I like airplanes. You know, that either one of those is a place to go, but I also know that there are two types of people that own airplanes, those that can afford them and those that can't. So you got to be careful with that. You join the associations with those guys, and as time goes, you learn who they are. And okay. So I could go in many different directions with that. To tell you that I'm going to go to the Elon Musk of the world, I don't do that. That's not my personality. My book is full of my personality, and I think Lisa and Peyton's as well. But I don't think I'll create a niche. I'll just try to utilize what I have, and the bucket's kind of full of a few different ones there.
Okay. So a couple of things in terms of niche markets to think about. You know, obviously, you know, I live in California, but I do have some Southern in me. I lived in Georgia for a while, so well, don't hold California against me. And I lived in Southern California for a while. But one of the things that I'll share with you is, we had a thing called the Concours d'Elegance. Are you familiar with that at all?
I've read about it a little.
Yeah, it's a, major car show on the West Coast of antique, cars. And, it's a big event. They hold it at Pebble Beach. And the amount of folks that come to that type of event are enormous. They come from all over the world to the Concours d'Elegance. So, you know, having automobiles and cars as a niche is kind of good. Maybe there's some overlap with NASCAR and that sort of thing that creates an opportunity. So you might think about that, and fully develop that niche market. And of course, airplanes is the same thing. Getting in touch with folks that buy and sell planes, you know, that have their own brokerage operations could be a source of, potential clients and referrals. So you do have a couple of niche markets that could be cultivated. And I would think about that. But here's what I tell people who are involved in niche markets is you got to read what your market reads. So if I was into the cars, I'd be reading Car and Driver magazine. There's one for airplanes. And it keeps you abreast of what's going on in that market. So you gotta get the trade. So for a guy like me who coaches financial advisors, you know, I'm looking at Advisor Hub online, Financial Planning Magazine, Trust Advisor, Investment News Daily. You know, those are just some of the trade publications out of about the 10 that I'm looking at to be abreast of what's going on in the market that I'm trying to serve. So that's where the niche markets come in. Begin to cultivate that.
We have all those magazines. We have all the magazines. We have cars. We have planes. We have, what else? He gets them all.
Okay. So he's into it.
He loves toys.
So that's more than a niche market for you. It's almost an avocation.
I have to be careful.
All right. Yes. I understand. Okay. The last thing we talked about was what is a center of influence and who are good centers of influence? These are people that give you unsolicited referrals. People that you're cultivating relationships with. So later on, we kind of talk about trying to identify six centers of influence. And so I'm going to ask you, Peyton Ford and Johnny, to start thinking about identifying at least three centers of influence per individual. Okay. And so, Pedden, do you have a center of influence with a CPA right now? An attorney? No,
I don't, but both of my aunts and my dad are, they work at State Farm and they have a pretty large network. They've been there for, I want to say like 30 years or so. So they give me pretty decent amount of referrals.
Okay. Now, have you articulated the type of client you like to work with them and what your service model is? That's your next step. That's what we're talking.
Well, I've somewhat told them a minimum of some sort, but it never really goes that way. They're always a little bit smaller so far. And maybe it's because we're not up in Greenville yet.
Right. Okay. So there's a maximum of six centers of influence per financial advisor on your team, which would be 12. I'd like you to begin to cultivating these each week. Okay. So you've got one or two. Try to identify a CPA that you feel comfortable with. Ask your clients, can they enthusiastically endorse their CPA or their attorney? Okay. That's a good way for you to find out.
Curtis, tell me how we define our minimals and service models, then, because we do get a decent amount of referrals from some bankers that we know, CPAs and attorneys that we know, and sometimes they've been great. Sometimes they've been, can you believe they referred that to me? You know, and I would assume they would know an account of their size is what I'm looking for, you know, but that doesn't always happen.
So what you have to do is you have to have a sit down conversation. Right now everybody's using Zoom. So you're going to have a virtual conversation and you're going to explain how you work and your service model and the type of client that you would enjoy working with that you can do more things with. Okay. So they just have to know, you know, and ask them, you know, look, just between you and I, Bill, you know, who are the three or four wealthiest individuals that you know and you have a relationship with? And let them speak. Who do you know that is getting that kind of service level that we're offering? And so give your COI an opportunity to see how you work. Now we're jumping a little ahead in the client acquisition component of this, but I'm going to give you a script. And I'm going to write this down, and it's for COIs and clients. And I'm going to email it to you after our call. It's a referral script. So I'm going to jump a little ahead with you, and on our next call, I'm going to coach you on that script. Okay. And it's called the VIPSA script. Okay. All right. So your brand.
JR.
JR, you had a question? JR? You're coming in a little broken. Did you have something that you wanted to say?
Hey, Kurt, I did. I'm driving right now. That's if it's broken, I'll just email the question later. I don't want to disrupt if my line's messed up.
Now, I'm hearing you clearly. I'm hearing you clearly now, so go ahead.
Okay, great. So my question in that COI discussion is, how do we make that so that it doesn't feel too one-sided, right? So we're not just showing up and saying, what can you do for me? Like, is there a recommendation that you have, or is that just is that a concern that I need to get over? I just want to make sure they show up in a way that there feels like there's some reciprocity in that relationship, and would like your opinion on that in general.
Okay. So my opinion is this. A center of influence is someone that likes you, you like them, and you're cultivating a relationship. But the COI is very willing to refer people to you because they like the work that you do. And they become almost a little bit of an extension of yourselves. So in the case of a CPA, he knows his client needs a roadmap, needs to begin to effectuate some tax minimization strategies, needs a financial plan, needs to holistically take care of the family. And he is struggling with, who do I refer this good quality client of mine to? Well, in comes the Pedden team. He knows how that team works. They have a concierge practice. They do a financial plan. They focus on intergenerational planning. They have their clients on a call schedule. They do 4 reviews. 2 of them are telephonic and 2 of them are in person. He now can enthusiastically endorse the Pedden team. That's what he's looking to do. Find someone that he feels comfortable with. What the Pedden team has done is they've gone out and reached out. Let's explain how we work. Let me introduce you to the members of my team. And let me explain to you how we treat our customers, which is different than how everybody else in the marketplace treats their clients. So that's kind of how it goes. So you might think it's one way, but it really is a two-way, and both people with the same objective, how can we best serve our client?
That's helpful. So the benefit to them is more of like an extension of me being able to take care of my existing client by having that confidence in what the Pedden group's going to do once they receive the referral.
Exactly.
It's helpful. Thank you.
And so the Pedden group, what we're trying to do is get the Pedden group to rise up in terms of the quality of service they provide so that they can attract larger sums of money and assets and relationships. You know, if we do this correctly, you know, you start to get 1 or 2 significant relationships, you might be able to go back into that book and say, well, there's probably 10 people that I can no longer work with. Okay? So you want to spend the quality of your time, your expertise, all that experience you've gained on the very best people in that concierge practice. Now, back to your niche market for just a moment. As an example, I have a friend, he happens to be a very close friend, who is a consultant in the agribusiness. And primarily, he has been focused on the wine industry up in Napa and Sonoma, and applies those services and capabilities to that group of folks. So if I had a financial advisor that says, Curtis, I'd like to use you as a center of influence. Can you suggest somebody that I should be speaking with? And I'm saying, hey, go talk to Mark. Let me set it up. Personal introduction. That's how we do it. It's not like, here's a business card, go call this guy. It's all personal introductions. So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves in terms of client acquisition, but I wanted you to cultivate where we're going with these COIs, because there's consultants, there's equipment salespeople, there's all kinds of centers of influence within the markets that you deal with that can become great COIs. Okay. Now, We know what a COI is. Supernova is your brand. So let's talk a little bit about your assignment for week number two. But before we do that, questions about anything I've covered so far?
I'm kind of, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think on the limit side, you said that I would have a limit. You suggested like 250, and for Johnny it would be 500. But when people come to me and ask about the Payton Group's limit, the Payton Group as a whole, do I tell them 250 or do I say 500?
That's a great question. All right. The senior partner in a law firm is going to be dealing with the biggie clients. The young associates are going to deal with some of the smaller ones. But what we want you to do right now is keep doing what you're doing in terms of the size. You can articulate your size and you can accept a smaller relationship. Okay? Because you're trying to meet your number. But keep in mind that the number determines the quality of your brand. So how do you want to really position yourself? Do you want to position yourself as, I'm the advisor in the market that deals with all of these smaller relationships, or I'm an advisor in the market that deals with clients that have $1 million or more in assets and the complexity of their issues and problems? That's what you're moving toward. Okay.
That's what I'm moving toward. But as of now, if somebody, if I walk out my front door and somebody asks me, do I say 250 or 500?
250.
Okay.
250. But keep in mind, I have a minimum threshold of 250. My target is 500. That's what you want to say, because what'll happen is you'll end up growing a practice where people will think that you're not capable of doing anything larger. Mm-hmm. And that's not how you want to establish your brand. Does that make sense?
It does. And when I think of my brand, I think of like the Payton Group as a whole, not just me.
Right. So articulate the Payton Group's number. Okay. For right now, it's 500,000. Okay. And what's going to happen is they'll say one of two things. I don't have that kind of money. Well, what is your current level of assets right now? I can help you until you get there. Okay, you can make a comment like that. The other one is to say, hey, look, 500,000 is our threshold, and they may respond, well, look, I've got some accounts at LPL, I've got something at Fidelity, I'm going to bring those assets in. Okay. Lisa, did you have a question?
I do. This is just a side note of our challenge to get our arms around this and work hard on reaching these levels that we're discussing, but also our move to Greenville in the next several months. And how do we make sure that our clients don't feel like we're leaving an area, so to speak? Some might not, some won't notice it, but some will because of the communities that we serve now. Or we're going to be actually moving, physically moving to Greenville, which is 2 hours away. How do we make sure that we don't articulate something?
Excellent, excellent question. And let me tell you what advisors do. You know, like advisors in New Jersey, they got a lot of clients in Florida.
Right.
Okay. So what they do is they go down to Florida, you know, once a month and spend 2 days down there meeting clients. Okay. You're 2 hours away. Right now, we're all going to be meeting with them virtually, right?
Right.
But, you know, you're 2 hours away. So once a month, you know, you're going to go down and meet with individuals on an individual basis that you need to meet with. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be spending time cultivating your clientele in Greenville. But you're willing to, you know, set up a schedule where you don't just go down for 2 hours to meet with one person unless they're really substantial, but you're going to have a working schedule. You know, you're going to have a series of, you're going to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings for a period of 2 or 3 days, and then you're going to go back to Greenville. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that you can use Zoom and meet with people virtually, you're going to do that. But that's how you satisfy that.
Okay.
I'm finding, I mean, I've got an FA in Dublin, works for Morgan Stanley. He's got clients in Florida. Mm-hmm. So once a month, he goes down and he meets with them. That gives him a chance to take a little mini vacation sometimes.
Right.
So you can certainly do it that way. And it works out very, very well. Okay. What have I left out that you would like to talk about? Anything that you've read, any of the video information that's come out that you have any questions on? And I know I've taken up a little bit of extra time here. Hope you don't mind.
The intern, two things on that. The first one, we're not really sure exactly what he or she would be doing. And second of all, or why we need one. And second of all, how do we train and onboard an intern to our group with us being stuck at home?
Okay. Well, that's going to be really, really hard. And you'd have to do that virtually. But the composition of the folders that are made for each client, the ones that you're going to keep, and also for the prospects, that's what an intern would be doing, is they would be assembling all those folders so that we can leave Ted and Ford, Johnny, and Lisa to do all the important things that they need to do, you know, for the clients. Okay? So where the intern comes in is they're assembling things and putting them in a folder. Okay? The documents for the team. Now, we haven't gotten into that yet, but I think you should interview somebody virtually that might be able to do some things for you. Now, that just to find that one person could take you, you know, 2 weeks, 30 days. So you get started trying to identify that person, and I think there's a way where you can get the folders, send them to them, letting them know exactly what the contents are going to be. But
I'll jump in there real quick, Curtis.
Yeah.
It's JR. So I love the idea. I would just say, just given where we are in South Carolina, I just think it's best for us to hold off right now because the implementation of it, like I get resumes all the time for interns, and we just don't have the ability to onboard right now. We just got some bigger fish to fry with our office in general. But,
sure.
I do think we should put a pin in that to try to come back to it at the right time.
Okay.
Because I just think it would be difficult for us to execute on, like, just getting somebody on.
Right. Do you allow fully paid interns to be paid by the team?
We could actually, we have plenty of people who will do the work for free.
Oh, okay.
Who are interested and, you know, I probably get, a resume at least once a week. It's just that, in this environment, it's just, and to think about them compiling information and printing and, or us sending information to a college kid would just be, That would be really difficult to manage and for us to, in this environment to deal with. Yeah.
I get it. So folks, we got to put that one on hold.
Does that include putting the folders in general on hold?
No, we're going to have to move forward despite. Yeah, we're going to have to move forward despite what the current pandemic scenario is. We got to still work through it, you know, as a team.
And we can do that after hours, I'm sure. But the folders, like if we can't go give the folders to the client, then what's the point of doing the folders? And I may be jumping ahead because we haven't gotten into what's even inside of the folders.
Right. Yeah. We haven't even got into that yet. That's the step where we're going to talk about organization and we'll get to it.
Okay.
We'll have to come up with a workaround solution. Around that. It's just, you know, nobody kind of created this pandemic, but now we got to just deal with it. So I understand.
And the good thing is that I say the good thing is that this is going to come up with the other teams that you all are working with Supernova. And so Ebony, Bob Hadlow and I can brainstorm on our end too, to just think through if there's anything that we can do to support the folder creation. Right. So we'll think through that as well.
Okay. Great. All right, great question. Any other questions before we close it out? And I see Matt Campbell on the call and Ms. Mock. Okay, I can't hear you, but was there anything that you wanted to add to the conversation question-wise?
No, I was on mute, so that was my gift to you guys today, or mostly to Matt, maybe.
Okay.
So I think we could come up with a workaround that's pretty easy relative to the folders. And some of it just involves mailing it to the clients. I mean, I think the one component for them that's most important is where they document and keep those that ongoing list of things and questions that they have for you. So I think that might be pretty easy to work around and we'll come up with something there. And then otherwise, Matt, we're on the books to go through the dashboard with them to identify some opportunities that might exist as well. Is that correct?
No, actually we were going to bring it up on your previous call, but we've got a tool within our grasp here at Touchstone that could be helpful with a lot of the things that you're working on right now.
Okay.
And we were going to show it to you last week, but we ran into time complications, so we weren't able to make it to your call as well. Okay. Cause there's another one that happened simultaneous to this one. So, Johnny, I think you're familiar with our map review process, which we now call PAR, or practice analysis review. Sometimes taking that information has been helpful for other teams in creating segmentation lists, et cetera. It's just a good way of understanding the numbers at a high level, especially when you're making kind of all the decisions that you're making right now.
Okay.
So I am. Yeah, we're somewhat familiar with it.
Okay. So Cindy was going to schedule, or I thought we were scheduling that. So do we still need to grab them for 15 minutes to do that sometime the next week?
Yes, I think you all should schedule your time with them as a group.
Yeah, and my question is whether that's already happened or not.
Okay.
If Cindy was doing that, are you on that? Okay. So then we'll reach out to you guys. Make sure we're on the books there. And then JR, do you want to join that? It's sometimes really helpful to see that data. It's up to you, but if you want to, we'll make sure we put you on the invitation.
Okay.
That would be great. Please do.
All right. So look, assignment for week two. We've adjusted your absolute and your target minimums and maximums. So that's been done. Put your segmentation to work by meeting with a couple of clients that you're segmenting. Schedule meetings with them. The goal is 5 to 10 per week, okay? And that should involve articulating your new concierge service model to those clients. 5 to 10 per week.
That's clients that we're keeping or sending away?
Yeah, those would be clients that you're keeping and clients that you're going to reduce. Okay. You got to begin to start the segmentation process.
So five to 10 each.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see. take the top 30 households and identify your natural and target niches. So I think we talked about that in terms of cars and airplanes and farmers. So you really have a niche market. And after determining your niche, identify six potential centers of influence. So you can go as rapidly with that as you want, but I would say at least by next week, have three each identified. Okay? All right. And order your folders and schedule a call with Cindy for the scheduling tool. And I think that that's it. And begin to start looking at, you know, chapter three in your coaching guide. Any questions about what's kind of expected for you for the next week? Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know we went again a little longer, but, you know, I felt like we needed to do that. And if you have any thoughts, any questions about anything we've covered, feel free to call me. You've all offered up some very, very good and excellent questions, and I appreciate working with you.
I have a question, Curtis. I think our schedule said that we don't have a call next on the 29th. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's because Rob had scheduled some vacation time, and we wanted the teams to be in sync with one another.
Okay, so it'll be the following week that we gather.
Right. So okay. I got to be careful not to get you too far ahead.
That's right. that'll give us some time to whittle down our list of people. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
As far as folders, how many? I mean, 100 each. Me and Johnny said 200 total, like our target.
Yeah, why don't you start with that?
Okay.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Thank you, Curtis.
All righty. Pleasure's all mine.
Take care.
JR, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.